This is Andrew Moore Balladool talking to a Manx radio reporter in the field about the old thrashing mill. The noise in the background is that of the mill actually working at the time.
Well, the machine was.
This one, I think, is only about 1945, just after the war, I would say. Possibly pre-war, this one. Earlier machines were built entirely of wood, but this one, as you can see, is a steel mill, although it still retains the steel wheels. The newer ones, post-war ones, generally have pneumatic tyres.
Tell us why it's here in the field here, Andrew, and what actually is taking place here today.
Well, this machine was the predecessor of the common combine harvester, which you see in fields these days. And of course, the combine harvester is mobile, it moves around the field, whereas this machine does all the jobs that a combine harvester does, except the cutting of the corn. It merely works stationary to thrash the corn and make a good sample of the seed.
Now, one of the reasons that the machine is actually being used, I believe, is in connection with the Craignish Folk Museum, and the product of the day's labour, as it were, is going to be used for thatching the cottages down there. Why is it necessary to use this particular machine to do that?
Well, the straw that you use for thatching at Craignish or anywhere else, come to that, it has to be stiff straw and has to be straight. It's no use if it's been through a combine harvester and got broken up. Now, the process before the thrashing is cutting of the corn with the binder. And with a binder, you can cut corn about a fortnight earlier than you could with a combine harvester. It has to be left an extra length of time to combine it so the grain is perfectly ripe. Whereas with the binder, you can cut it that fortnight sooner, and the straw is a little bit greener and a bit tougher, which is more suitable for the thatch. So it has to then to be put through the thrashing mill, which produces straight straw coming out of the front of the machine. And instead of that straw being baled, as it would be after a combine harvester, it goes through that little machine, which is called a bundler. And that keeps it straight, and puts two twines on it, and makes a bundle of it for the thatching.
I see. And how many of these machines are actually still in operation, or is this unique?
Well, I think there are still three or four machines in the Isle of Man which operate from time to time. But the museum secured this one from Fale Brothers at Stoward Farm in Sulby about 3 years ago. And they've recently painted it and maintained it, and it should last them over 30 or 40 years, because it only does about 5 or 6 days' work in the year.
I see. Now, the project here today, this is, I believe, sponsored to some degree by the Manx Museum.
Oh, yes. The machine is theirs, the bundler is mine, but the thrashing mill is theirs, and it's driven with this Fordson tractor, which also belongs to me. But their own staff come and assist in the stooking of the corn after it's been cut with the binder, putting it into stacks, which we have here, which we're thrashing today, and then they do all the drawing of the thatch. The thatch, as it comes out of the bundler today, isn't in a fit state to be used onto a roof as thatch straight away. It has to be drawn. That is, the shorter bits and the brock are pulled out of it, and then the best stuff is retained and retied by hand, and then it's for use straight onto the roof.
I see. We're standing actually next to one of the stacks, Andrew, and drawing a piece of it. How long does it need to be before it becomes suitable for a thatched roof?
Well, the length really depends on the season. If you've had a rainy season, as we had this summer, the straw grows a bit longer and it's more suitable for thatch. But really, any length will do, as long as it's stiff and straight. Hence the use of the bundler in conjunction with the thrashing mill to keep the straw straight. That's the essential thing.
I see. Anyway, it's a fascinating insight into how it's done. And this machine, what does it actually run on? The tractor there is actually powering the machine, is it?
The tractor runs on paraffin. It starts on petrol when it's cold. When the engine is sufficiently hot, you switch over to paraffin and it'll run on paraffin.
Now, that tractor looks itself pretty old, an old Fordson there. That must be heading on almost as old as the actual machine, will it?
I think it's pre-war, possibly 1939.
So the tractor and the thrashing machine both have quite a few stories to tell, I would imagine.
I would imagine so, yes. But as long as they they're kept under cover, both should last a long time yet.
Farmer Andrew Moore talking there to Simon Richardson, who decided after that interview that a warm office job isn't too bad after all.
This is a Manx radio broadcast on the open day up at Craigneish in July 1988 with Geraldine Jamieson doing the interview. The first speaker is Philip Gawn, and then we come to Alec Madrill with the sheep.
Well, hello and a warm welcome to Living on an Island. And I must say it couldn't be more appropriate and more traditional than to come to the open day down at Craigneish, the lovely little village in the south of the island that is very oldie-worldy Manx and has been preserved and kept just to think as it always was. Now I've come to the heart of Craigneish, and of course it's Harry Kelly's cottage, who donated it, I understand, to the Manx Nation in 1932. Philip Gawn, you're the guide at the moment here, yes, showing people around. We're standing in front of a lovely turf fire, and we've got a bit of Manx music being played on traditional instruments outside. The atmosphere is just set wonderfully.
It is.
Tell us about Harry Kelly's cottage.
Well, Harry Kelly, of course, well, the cottage was donated to the museum 54 years ago when he died, and it's been open for, well, the last 50 years, really. And all of the furnishings in the place are as they were, more or less, when he died. There's bits of crocks and things have been broken over the years, which I suppose have been replaced, and a few extra things have been added in, but it's more or less as it was when he left the place. So.
For anybody that could possibly not have been here, I can't imagine that there is such a soul alive on the Isle of Man. It consists largely of two functional rooms.
Well, it's the three rooms in effect. There's the Taivoor, was the kitchen, the big room that's with the big the chalet going where all the cooking and the general living was done. Then there was the little bedroom where the parents would stay, and then the loft up the top where the children would be sleeping, and they'd have the storage for the nets and things like that, and the children would be picking up on the storage. They'd sleep nearer the front end of the loft, so that's where they got their education in effect, was from listening to the stories that were going on from the older people when they'd gather around the fire of a night time.
And I believe that corridor there, almost from the door, there was a purpose in that, wasn't there, with the thrashing?
Yeah. Well, they would do all the thrashing as such in the Taivoor, the big room. But then the little corridor, there's a front door and there was a back door, it's actually bricked up now. They'd get the corridor going there. There'd be a blanket across on the Taivoor side, and the door would be shut. Once they got the draft going through, they could start winnowing the corn, getting the chaff to come off in what's called the dollan. Now the dollan is a sort of a drum type affair, but it was used for everything, storing, for winnowing, for covering cakes, and it's well, you name it, it was for us. It was just sums up the idea of the well, it's what they call cottage economy. That everything that they had was used for everything. There was nothing that they had to buy in or
surplus to requirements. Exactly, everything had a practical use. Talking of cakes, actually, there's a bonnock here.
That's right, the
by
bonnocks
the
is going. We were cooking those earlier on there. I think these ones here is a bit stale, but we've got some fresh ones on the table there for people to take a sample of it as they're going along.
A lovely Manx eggs, and indeed some Manx flowers in a vase in the window. It's delightful. Now, you've got, what's the Lockton fleece here on the spinning wheel?
There'll be bits of Lockton wool there, yes. This is Harry Kelly's grandmother's spinning wheel. So
how old would that be?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't like to say exactly, but at least 150 years old anyways. Well, it would have to be more than that, wouldn't it?
Thank you.
Well, in the middle of a field here, right in the centre of Craigneish today, a lot of females, I'm quite surprised, are shearing a few Loughton sheep. Now, Alec Madrill...
They're not Loughton sheep, these. They're crossbred sheep. These aren't the Loughton sheep at all. These are what we call grey-faced, the cross between a Leicester and a Swaledale or a Scotch.
Well, I thought this particular little field was always reserved for the Loughton, Alec.
Aye, well, the Loughtons are up here. They're just pushed out of the way for the time being. There's only a ewe, a ram and a lamb left, the Loughtons. And the calf, the Loughtons, are.
But, of course, the Loughton fleece isn't actually a very generous fleece, is it?
No, not really, no. But it's much in demand though.
But it's beautiful dark brown sweaters, well, isn't it?
Yes, you don't want to dye it. You don't need to dye it.
No.
But if you get the real Manx sheep, there's not a lot of them real Manx sheep at all. Now they're getting better now. They were nearly extinct, you know. And then they brought in the soy to ram the grass with them. But they've got back pretty well now. There's about 100 ewes on the calf of man.
It's great to see it, actually, the Manx indigenous breeds being revived.
Oh, yes, yes.
Part of our heritage, isn't it?
Well, it is, yes. And we're getting thin on the ground now, the Manx people. Only about 20%, don't they?
Well, listen, you've got a good Manx name, Madrill.
Yes, but I'm one. Not very many now. I've seen big changes in my time here.
Tell us about that.
In Craigneish. Well, I remember the craft, the people keeping the cow and just a cow and perhaps a follower and a few sheep and two or three little craft. I see here. I remember that, and most of them seabaring, going to the herring fishing.
So life was hard in those days.
Well, they were surviving. It was hard, yes, but everybody had it hard those days. Hard work and no money much. No money.
But there were good times all the same.
Good times. I wish they were back again, the horses and playing with the horses. And
people had a great community spirit.
Oh, well, that's it, and that's all finished now. Used to be, if you were living in a little village like this, you'd be three or four people in at night telling about the experiences, the fishing and one thing and another, and the night was gone. You didn't want television.
You had plenty to occupy. Must have been great when there was something to celebrate, like weddings.
Oh, yes, I was never much for the weddings at all, but they had a big do at the weddings and the funerals too. They used to be singing outside the house, and then they'd walk up to the parish church and follow the bears would take the coffin and follow it up to the parish church. Oh, it'd be a big day.
Bit of a wake afterwards.
Yes, but the Manxmen's fond of a wake as the Catholic people who used to have a wake, but there weren't many Catholic people about then.
Really, Craigneish was more Methodist, I suppose.
Oh, yes. But I remember I went to the high school in Douglas, and in my form, there was only one Catholic in it, and he had to go out when we had
morning
service, yes.
Well, tell us what the youngsters are doing here today now. Jousting, I believe, is the old Manx term.
Oh, well, no, they call those jouse, not shears, they call them jouse. The Manx do call them jouse. But shearing, clipping, the Manx say.
Clipping.
Yes, clipping.
I mean, there's an old saying that if you got one of these chatterbox women, they're always accusing us women of talking forever. But a
jouse
egg.
No, well, I think John is wrong there. A jouse egg is a bond that's a bit of a terror, like yourself, I suppose. A jouse egg.
I thought this man had a glint in his eye. Well, listen, have you instructed these girls? I mean, are these sheep safe or what? Where are these youngsters from?
Oh, all over. Up St. Mark's. That girl there, the top girl, is St. Mark's, and one up the Braid somewhere. I don't know where they all are. One has put air in that ginger-haired girl. I don't know what she's doing here.
I must say it's great, but I'm surprised there are no fellows, because I wouldn't have thought
they'd be coming just now. They'd be having to work, you see, this morning, and they'd be coming this afternoon.
But was this a woman's job in the old days?
No, I never seen any women in my bringing up. Well, none of my sisters or mother did any jousting, any shearing. It was always the men. They lifted, they went in the harvest field to lift the corn round when they cut the roads round the fields. But they put the horses in the binder in so that they wouldn't trample on the corn round the outside of the field. They would cut it with the scythe, and then the women would come and lift it up and tie it up. And then before the binder came, I remember one or two, I don't remember many. We had a binder all my time. And they were, when the what they call the little machine, the reaper, they'd be cutting with the reaper, and there was boards, and then they'd have somebody, what they would call them, putting the sheaf, and was they pushing it off, and the women come and lift it and come round the field like that. But then the binder came into being, and it was tying it and cutting it and tying it, and then we had the stookit, if you know what stooks are.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And then we had the cart that in into stacks, and then we had to thatch the stack, and then the steam mill would come, and we had to thrash it. It was all, now it's all done by, with combined harvesting.
So really, your harvesting would have gone on all through the summer?
Well, out in, seen it as late as November, because you couldn't put it in the stack unless it was dry. And you'd be out in the fields if the clover was up high in the sheaf, and you'd be out furthering sheaves out, shaking them out and getting all this clover out of them and putting them to the wind to dry and out in the moonlight. And it was a
wee bit of courting going on as well in the moonlight.
Oh yes, 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 if you had the energy and the time. So.
Well, I noticed you got married.
Yes. Well, that's what I told the wife, it's time enough to get married when you're too old to look after yourself.
It's a wonderful sense of humour you have, Alec, and it's going to be a great day, isn't it?
Yes, oh yes. I remember in my young days, if somebody would send you down to Port St Mary to get an ounce of tobacco, and when you come back, I'd give you a sixpence in Craigney's Fair Day. But I said, thinking, if he was here now, and he'd get a hang of a suck. I never thought I'd see it for a fair day in Craigneys. It's been on 4 years now, and it's looking very good too. It's popular enough.